From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, the Supreme Court on Friday gave a green light to the Trump administration to tap into $2.5 billion in Defense Department money to build portions of the wall on the southern border. Florida Congressman Ted Yoho, a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee, joins us from the border. And Iran, who is holding a British-flagged tanker, which they seized on July the 19th, said a proposal by the British of sending a European-led naval force to escort tankers in the Persian Gulf is, quote, provocative and will increase tensions, end quote. Defending ships from hostile commandos is provocative. Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin is here with more. Also, students in South Dakota will soon return to school and see a message posted in their classrooms that has the head of the Freedom From Religion Foundation saying, quote, it will inflict a godly message on a captive audience of school children, end quote. What is the message? Well, the author of the successful legislation designed to inspire patriotism in the students joins me a little bit later here on Washington Watch. And last week, the Department of Justice joined Congress and the Federal Trade Commission into looking at possible antitrust violations by internet giants. Do Google, Amazon, Apple, and others have anything to fear? Former Walmart CEO Bill Simon weighs in on that story. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right. As I mentioned on Friday, the Supreme Court cleared the way for the Trump administration to tap into billions of dollars in the Pentagon Fund to build about 100 miles of the border wall with Mexico. The court's five conservative justices gave the administration the green light to begin work on four contracts it has awarded using Defense Department money. Funding for the projects has been frozen by lower courts while a lawsuit over the money proceeds. The court's four liberal justices wouldn't have allocated the construction, or rather allowed the construction to start. Joining me live from our southern border is Congressman Ted Yoho. He represents the 3rd District of Florida and serves on the Foreign Affairs Committee and the Agriculture Committee as well. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thank you for having me on, and I appreciate the work you do.
Well, thank you. It was good to see you last week on Capitol Hill at the Republican Study Committee. And always appreciate having you on the program because you keep up with what's going on. I know you're down there seeing what's happening on the border for yourself. Give us the latest.
Yeah, we're here firsthand. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we toured the detention centers and we saw some of the migrants come that were there, some of them being processed. And I can't give a large enough shout out for our Customs Border Patrol people, the people that are down here. They have what's best for the people that are coming into this country. And just a remarkable job, great facilities. And that garbage you heard out of the people that came down here, how bad it was and, you know, drinking out of toilets, that is just completely, it's a lie. It's an untruth. And the people that said those, you know, are just not straight with the American people.
Now, are you there on your own? Or are you with other members of Congress that are touring the facilities?
We have 9 members of Congress here.
Is it a bipartisan group?
No, it's not a bipartisan. They've had bipartisans. This one was, I don't know, somebody else organized this, and I don't know if the Dems didn't want to come on or not.
So I would have to imagine that the president surely is excited that the Supreme Court has given the go-ahead for the defense funds to be used for building the wall down there. What's the morale
Absolutely.
Like? What's the morale like down there of those that are actually protecting the border?
Well, the morale with the money coming out of the Supreme Court, which is a good thing and a bad thing. The good thing is they say what they need down here is they need security. Wherever there is a wall, there's less people coming in. There's still people coming in, but there's less. It takes them longer. And so they can do a better job, the Customs Border Patrol can. The bad thing about having to use DOD money is Congress should get their act together and secure the border. You know, we shouldn't have to be taking money out of there. It should be a common sense thing that says secure the border. And I've talked to Democrats on different trips that we've been on. They all agree that we need to have a secure border. but they can't go publicly because, oh, they can't be seen as walling off an area.
Now Congressman,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, you made reference to what some of your colleagues on the other side of the aisle said after going down to the border, that you had people drinking out of toilets, you had children sitting in their own feces, you had all of these horrible things. If we had the border wall, which would be a deterrent for people trying to come into this country because it would be harder, fewer would come because of the obstacles that are in the way, would that not lessen the potential humanitarian crisis that we're seeing at the border?
Absolutely. It would lessen it so much, Tony. And you had asked about the morale of the people down here. The morale is good, but when they get vilified in the news and by members of Congress, it wears on them. They are doing an excellent job. But to go back to your last question, the more we can do to slow down the influx of people, the better it is on our facilities, the better it is on the strain on our Border Patrol agents. You know, what's interesting is the policy that President Trump had of saying that we are going to close trade with Mexico if they don't help us. When he said that, the numbers dropped down. And then when the Mexicans started to do it, the Mexican government, it dropped down. When he did some of his other policies, zero tolerance, numbers dropped down. And so deterrence work. It's just following through and then having the common sense reforms of border security. We are going to enforce the laws on the book, and we need to change a couple laws so that we can do a better job faster.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida, my guest. He's actually on our southern border right now with a group of members of Congress. Ted, I know you've been down there many times, so you've been down there firsthand. You've seen this. You made reference to this, but the president, you know, driving that hard trade bargain with Mexico and basically getting them to agree to putting troops on the border. Have you seen a distinct difference between now and when you were there before the Mexican authorities started guarding the border?
Tony, that's what we're seeing, and that's what we've been told, is when the people showed up from the Mexican government, and then, of course, keep in mind, they put a bigger force on their southern border, it just changed it tremendously. I mean, it slowed it down. And the word's gotten out that, you know, these people are serious about border security and immigrating properly. We've got ways for people to come into this country properly. You know who's making the money on this is the drug cartels. Nobody crosses this border unless they pay the drug cartel. And the average fee is between $3,500 and $10,000. And so the longer this goes on, the more there is the humanitarian crisis. People are being trafficked. We just hear ungodly numbers that would anybody in their right mind would say, secure the border, enforce the laws on the book.
I want to ask you to address something, Congressman Yoho, that oftentimes gets lost in the discussion. I know a lot of our listeners probably heard this, but, you know, there's this perception by many that we're talking about the southern border with Mexico, and these are people from Mexico coming over. They're just coming through Mexico. There's a lot of folks coming from different parts of the world that have other purposes and intentions than just economic opportunity that are crossing our border.
Oh, you're so right. There's over 57 countries that they've identified, from China to Africa, all over Central and South America, the Indonesia area, the South Asia Pacific area. So there's people all over the world coming through. And the reason they're coming is because they know that it's an easy place to get through, that America doesn't have their act together. And it's interesting because we're seeing more Cubans come this way because we got rid of the wet foot, dry foot policy, and they're coming through this border. And, you know, again, if we exercise the rules already on the books, we don't need a lot of new rules and laws. But if we just enforce those and have some semblance of border security and agreements with other countries like Mexico, Guatemala, the arrangement that President Trump has done with them, and then have tough policies that we will close this border if you do not come to the table and help secure this. Because all this influx is weakening America. And a weakened America is not good for the Western Hemisphere. And to be honest, it's not good for the world.
So, when the president takes these hard positions, which people, you know, say, oh, you can't be diplomatic and take that. But it's bringing results.
It is bringing results. And, you know, people can sit there and complain about his message and how he does stuff on Twitter. But I would encourage him to look at the results. If he's getting the results you want, which he is in this case, let's applaud those results and, give him the support that he needs. And again, we shouldn't have to be taking money from DOD
right.
to do that, what Congress should be doing.
Right.
But I'm glad he went
so
that
true.
Route and the Supreme Court ruled the correct way.
Congressman Yoho, before we run out of time here, you know, last time we were discussing Venezuela, that's not been so much in the news as of late, although the situation there really has not changed. It's still a desperate situation. What's the latest?
The latest is there are 66 countries now recognizing President Juan Guaido as the interim president of Venezuela. I just got back from a trip from Argentina and Chile. The president of Chile, Panera, he was the first one in Latin America to come out to support Guaido. And so there's more pressure coming from the Latin American countries and from the EU to recognize Juan Guaido. Keep in mind, Tony, the people that are working against this are the people that are working against Western democracies. It's Russia, Cuba, China, and Iran, along with Maduro. And so these are all people that are not working for, a stable world. They're working to destabilize the world. And, it was good to hear people coming to Guaido's, and the idea is that there's going to be more support behind him, and eventually that regime will turn if China and Russia and Cuba stay out of it.
So is it my sense that it appears that our policy now is to kind of step back and let kind of this natural progression take place, let other countries come along, and just the weight of their bad decisions bring about the implosion?
Well, that and, the diplomatic pressure we put on, like the Lima Group, which is an organization of, I think, 12 Latin American countries that have come together, the Organization for American States. The pressure that we talk to European unions and saying this guy has bad human rights abuses. You know, they've got a 10 million% inflation rate. He's driving people out of his country, and it's not for the betterment of the Venezuelan people. So all these are coming together, putting more weight on that pressure. And I think you'll see him cave, and the sooner the better.
Certainly,
because if we don't do this, Tony, we're going to have a serious situation in the Western Hemisphere, and we know how bad that's turned for the Middle East, and we don't want that in our hemisphere.
Right. We're talking about the largest man-made humanitarian crisis in history, potentially in the making. Congressman Ted Yoho, as always, great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for taking time out there on the border to join us.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you for your time and what you do. God bless.
All right. Thank you. Congressman Ted Yoho of Florida, great conservative leader. All right, when we come back, Iran, they are warning the British not to to bring naval escorts over into the Persian Gulf to help out the tankers. They say it could be provocative, really. General Jerry Boykin joins us next on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. This is a win for the pro-life community. Now this funding will go to organizations like community health centers and pregnancy resource centers that are focused on healthcare, not abortions. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10.
Family Research Council is dedicated to advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture. That's why we offer a dynamic internship program to invest in the next generation of leaders. The Family Research Council internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students on impacting government and culture from a biblical worldview. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC. For more info and to apply, visit frc.org/internships.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right. The Iranian officials warning the British that the idea of a European-led naval convoy coming over to the Persian Gulf to assist tankers in coming through the Strait of Hormuz is a provocative idea that could escalate tensions over there. So seizing British-flagged vessels is not provocative. Joining me now to talk more about this is our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, a founding member of Delta and currently the Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council. General, welcome back.
Good to be with you.
Welcome back to radio and welcome back from Alaska, from a fishing trip, huh?
Yeah, that was quite a year up there. They're catching a lot of fish. I wish I was still up there, quite frankly.
Yeah, I bet. A little cooler there than in D.C., huh?
Much cooler.
A little warm outside. All right. What's happening with the Iranians are really hurting with the inability to sell their oil. The sanctions that the Trump administration put on them after withdrawing from the Obama-led nuclear agreement is really hurting them.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says that we have shut down 95% of the oil that was coming out of Iran being transported to other locations. So, if you're only selling 5% of the oil that you were selling before, that is a significant loss in revenue.
So their economy is hurting. They are looking for a way out of this, but it looks like they're looking in all the wrong places. I mean, seizing British-flagged vessels with commandos does not appear to be a way to negotiate out of this.
No, I think part of what they're doing, Tony, is they're trying to heighten the fears of war. They know that the Europeans and the Americans as well are really afraid of going to war, and that the Trump administration certainly does not want to go to war. But I think they're raising these tensions and trying to strike fear on this whole issue of going to war. At the same time, they're trying to persuade the Europeans to put pressure on the Trump administration to get back in the treaty, stop the sanctions, and so forth. And I think that the Russians are right in the middle of it. I think the Russians are encouraging the Iranians to stand strong and you can win this, you know. And what they're doing is they're playing their hand very poorly because they're alienating the Europeans.
Wait, you know, when they say, look, we want to be back in the JCPOA, that nuclear agreement, it kind of reminds me of Briar Rabbit. You know, throw us back into that where we can do what we want to do, which is expand our nuclear program. Yeah. The Trump administration has put the squeeze on them, and it appears to be working. Now, for those who have not followed this story, British forces impounded an Iranian tanker in early July near Gibraltar, accusing it of violating European Union sanctions on Syria, an act that the British say had nothing to do with the nuclear deal, nothing to do with the sanctions that the Trump administration has put on. This is totally separate. This is Syria. So it's not a tit for tat. What the Iranians did in the Strait of Hormuz, completely illegal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. That what the Iranians did was a pure and simply a provocation. They're trying to provoke the British. That said, the British used international law as well as maritime law to seize the ship that was trying to violate the international sanctions against Syria. That ship was taking oil from Iran and trying to take it into Syria, which was against the international sanctions that had been placed on them. So the British were totally legal under both maritime and international law, and the Iranian seizure was nothing but a retaliation.
I would say this. It appears the Trump administration has displayed tremendous discipline in the reaction to the provocative steps taken by Iran in not overreacting and not taking military action.
No, that's right. And also and not agreeing to trade ships.
Right.
I think that was a significant thing. I think even though Boris Johnson's father had made the recommendation that they just simply trade ships. That was a foolish recommendation on his part, in my view. But the Brits have stood strong on this thing. They've said, no, you did that illegally. You did that against maritime and international law. That was a provocation, but we're not trading you ships. We seized this ship legally, and we seized it for the right reasons. But let's go back to something you said a minute ago. You were talking about the Iranians, you know, wanting us to get back in this agreement. And you have to ask yourself a simple question. Why were the Iranians under the JCPOA allowed to keep centrifuges? First of all, they need those centrifuges to make nuclear weapons. They don't need them to make fuel for nuclear power plants. Yeah, they want us to get back into this, but also to let them keep their centrifuges, because what they're doing is they're making nuclear fuel. They're enhancing it to the 20%, which can then, the easy part is going from 20% up to weapons grade. And they were allowed to keep centrifuges. They can buy nuclear fuel from the Russians or any number of other countries that would sell them nuclear fuel. They were on the pathway to a nuclear weapon.
And this exposes the previous deal that the Obama administration negotiated with Iran as being meaningless in terms of preventing them from pursuing their nuclear weapons.
No, that is exactly correct. And they said, well, they may have one in a decade. Well, they should never have one with a theology the way like they have.
Right.
Which actually would give them a compelling reason to use a nuclear weapon, particularly against their hated enemies, Israel. They should never be allowed to have a nuclear weapon. And even the JCPOA folks said, well, it would be a decade before. Well, that's all that is kicking the can down the road. Let's let the next president deal with this, or the one after him.
It'd be interesting to watch. Hopefully, as you said, hopefully the British will stand firm and join the United States in seeing that previous Obama negotiated deal for what it was, meaningless.
Yeah, absolutely.
General, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll be waiting for that salmon.
Yeah.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, we'll be joined by Senator Phil Jensen, co-sponsor of a bill in South Dakota that has the atheists going crazy. That's next. Don't go away.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Then come join us at FRC Action's Values Voters Summit in D.C. From October 11th to the 13th, hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Oliver North, Dana Lash, and congressional leaders. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Have you subscribed to Tony Perkins' Washington Update yet? This daily email newsletter analyzes the most important events and topics at the forefront of the battles for religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more. Not only in Washington, but around the world. Learn more and subscribe to these must-read stories by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Listening to Washington Watch, I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, when students return to public schools across South Dakota this fall, they will see a new message on display, one that has some atheists upset. The message, In God We Trust. A new state law that took effect this month requires all public schools in the state's 149 districts to paint, stencil, or otherwise prominently display the national motto. Joining me now to talk about this legislative victory is South Dakota Republican State Senator Phil Jensen, the primary sponsor of the bill. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony.
You know, this, most folks don't realize that the national motto adopted in 1956 at the height of the Cold War was a way to make a declaration in a time of need that America was one nation under God, that preceded the In God We Trust motto being adopted. You said that you want to do this to inspire patriotism within the students in the schools.
Well, as you're aware, Tony, in this day and age, we certainly have issues in our society, and I think that just kind of refocusing on what it really means to be an American and implementing our national motto into our public school system is imperative.
And did you face much resistance as you were moving this bill forward?
Well, The state high school association, various education groups came out against it for various reasons, you know, whether separation of church and state or whether it had to do with the idea of a mandate were things that were brought up.
Mm-hmm. I know that the Freedom From Religion Foundation has expressed concern, although that apparently they're not going to challenge it because I don't think they really have any ground to stand on. But they said our position is that it's a terrible violation of freedom of conscience to inflict a godly message on a captive audience of school children. How is the national motto a violation of conscience?
Well, that's a real good question because it's on our coins. It's on all of our money. And the courts have consistently ruled that it's not an establishment of religion. It's patriotic in nature, and it strengthens the foundation of our freedoms.
Yeah, it's clearly it's a part of history, but I think I'm hoping that this will lead to conversations about the origins of the motto. I mean, it actually went on to our coins back in 1864, but it wasn't until 1956 it was adopted as a national motto. But in each of those cases, there were reasons, because we were at points, as you just described a moment ago, the situations we're facing in our country today, we need a recognition that God has to be our trust. And I think I for one, think the reason we have so many problems in our culture and our country today is because we have removed God so far from society, beginning in our public schools.
Absolutely. And frankly, I anticipate a move by some legislators to bring our state motto to bear this next session, which is "Under God, the People Rule."
Well, that will make for interesting conversations as well.
Yes, it will.
I want to applaud you for taking the initiative to do this, and congratulate you on the success of doing it. But this is where I believe we should be going, as we have the opportunity to serve in capacities as legislators, city councilmen, school board members. We cannot back away from our history and who we are as a people, because if we do, we do it to our own demise.
Yes.
Senator, thanks so much for joining us again. Congratulations on your successful effort here.
Well, thank you, Tony. Excuse me. I appreciate all your support and all you do. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Senator Jensen, Phil Jensen from South Dakota. You know, these are the type of things that may look symbolic, but they're quite significant. And I know probably 20 years ago, Mississippi adopted this. They put it on their license plates, and we've seen they actually put it in their classrooms first. And other states followed suit. We've had sheriff's departments across the nation have put these on the back of their cars. "In God We Trust," the national motto. It's the national motto. And as Senator Jensen pointed out, it's been litigated. They've gone after the currency, the coins, unsuccessfully tried to have it removed. So it's a great opportunity for other legislators around the country to, if your policy's not in place, to do this. Have the schools post the national motto. There's more than one way to skin a cat, as they say. Is that what they say? All right. More Washington Watch to come on the other side of this break, as the Department of Justice last week announcing a investigation, a review of big tech companies and possible antitrust violation, monopolies. We're going to talk with the former CEO of Walmart, Bill Simon, joins us next to talk about where this might lead and if it really is a problem for consumers. That's next here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
In New York, Virginia, and Vermont.
Happy birthday to you.
They're expanding abortion, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Every life should be welcomed with love, not hate, not death. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Then come join us at FRC Action's Values Voters Summit in D.C. From October 11th to the 13th, hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Oliver North, Dana Lash, and congressional leaders. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Have you subscribed to Tony Perkins' Washington Update yet? This daily email newsletter analyzes the most important events and topics at the forefront of the battles for religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more. Not only in Washington, but around the world. Learn more and subscribe to these must-read stories by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Family Research Council is dedicated to advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture. That's why we offer a dynamic internship program to invest in the next generation of leaders. The Family Research Council internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students on impacting government and culture from a biblical worldview. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC. For more info and to apply, visit frc.org/internships.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics, but they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christian's call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
I'm Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch, the website tonyperkins.com. All right, the federal government has turned its full investigative powers toward examining the world's biggest technology companies, building on a backlash against the industry that has been growing for over a year. Last week, the Justice Department said that it would start an antitrust review into how internet giants have accumulated market power and whether they had acted to reduce competition. Now, similar inquiries are underway in Congress. We've had several hearings on Capitol Hill. Also, the Federal Trade Commission is in on it as well, which shares antitrust oversight responsibilities with the Justice Department. Joining me now with his analysis is former Walmart CEO Bill Simon. Bill, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. How about you?
Terrific. Thanks for asking.
Well, let's jump into this. Now, the Justice Department did not identify any particular companies that they were looking at, but everyone's eye immediately went to Google, Amazon, Facebook, Apple. Is there something here that could possibly lead to the federal government taking potential actions for antitrust violations?
Well, I think in a few instances, a case could be made. I don't think big is inherently bad by definition, but some of the practices that have been going on in some of the companies for a while have concerned me, and I've spoken about them before, particularly Amazon. And I think it's really interesting to look at, if you look at it sort of, you know, at the 30,000-foot level. But investors particularly have been really exuberant about Amazon driving their share price up, despite the fact that they don't make a lot of money or hadn't made a lot of money until recently. And then recently, their profit has been driven by their web services business, their cloud business. If you take the sum total of their retail business, international and domestic, and then you filter out web services profit, their advertising profit, and their brick-and-mortar profit, which comes largely from their Whole Foods acquisition, it's really debatable whether today they even make any money at all in their online business. And yet they continue to grow the top line. Their most recent quarter grew 20%, despite the fact that their operating income declined. So they're selling below cost and putting a lot of pressure on retailers. And that has had obviously an adverse effect. Now, in and of itself, Tony, that's not anti-competitive. What is, and where I think I start to get a little nervous about with Amazon, if I were in their shoes, is kind of back up to 2011, 2007, I think, is when Amazon Prime started. It was at $79. And it put a lot of pressure on several retailers, and then Circuit City went out of business, and Linens and Things went out of business in about 2011. And suddenly in 2014-15, Amazon raised the price of Prime to $99. And then you fast forward, Toys R Us goes out of business, and now it's $119. And that could be construed as anti-competitive behavior, you know, driving people out of business and raising your price.
Well, that there would fit the classic definition of what monopolies do. But generally speaking, the federal government has been slow to look at, as you said, big is not necessarily bad, as long as the consumers are benefiting and they've pretty much left their hands off. But there's a new twist to this that I don't think we saw in previous years, like with AT&T, Standard Oil, when you saw these big monopolies broken up by the government, is that there is an ideological aspect here where many of these big companies have liberal social policies that are weighing into shaping public policies, or else they're in some of these big platforms where social media takes place, where they seem to be censoring conservative thought and interaction. So there's like a new angle that's being considered in this, or might lead to greater government action.
Well, I mean, it's certainly concerning if you think about it. You know, 100 years ago, the public square was literally the public square, and you know, that was really hard to have any ideological bent to. It transitioned to, you know, 75 or 50 years ago, the public square became the press, and there's always been a little bit of a bias in the press, but now that the public square is you know, Twitter and the social media giants and its control, it can be regulated by them in a way to filter out opinions that they're not in line with, and that appears to be the case. Now, I think, you know, I don't know that there's any legislation, and I don't think when the laws were written, this sort of thing was contemplated, that the public square could be owned by somebody. And then whether their rights as an independent business, as opposed to the rights of free speech in America, and how those two things conflict, it sounds to me like it's going to end up in the Supreme Court.
I would think so, but I do think that, you know, these investigations are being fueled in part because there's a mixture. I mean, you got Amazon, you know, not only sell products, you know, they sell books, and recently involved in a controversy over banning certain books that deal with certain types of sexuality, human sexuality, that helps people overcome same-sex attractions. Of all the books, those are the ones they've chosen to ban, which has caused concern on Capitol Hill. You see Google been on the Hill a number of times in their restricted platforms for what some say are cooking the algorithms to drive people away from conservative content. I mean, and of course, you look at their track record. I mean, European authorities have fined Google for antitrust violations over there regarding online advertising to the tune of about $107 billion. So they have a record for doing some things that others see as not quite above board.
Yeah, I think that's a concern. Businesses have always had some sort of a political bent to them, and it'll show up in the days that they're open, some of the content that they choose to sell or not sell. What's particularly concerning now is that our social conversation is being controlled by these folks. And that's again, I don't think that was ever contemplated by the lawmakers or the founders when they built the legislation around free speech and how that would be monitored. And I really do think that's a concern that's going to need to be addressed.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Bill Simon, my guest, former CEO of Walmart USA. Let me ask you about that, Bill. I mean, you've seen quite an evolution in the business industry, where they went from, you know, when Sam Walton created Walmart to sell American products to American people in rural America. Walmart has gone through quite a change. But business is no longer just in the business of selling widgets. We've seen more and more just in the last decade where big business is now stepping into social policy.
Yeah, and I do really think, Tony, this has just been in the last few years. You know, in the early to middle part of my business career, it was, look, we're a business. We'll sell to anybody. We try to stay out of the public, you know, eye on issues that can be confrontational. Our view was always, let's just run a business. And I think increasingly now, just like the rest of our world, people seem to be taking sides and moving in different directions. And that polarization has really become apparent in businesses, and businesses have taken positions on things that I honestly wouldn't think they would have any business taking a position on, because it invariably will alienate one large customer base in one direction or the other, and boards of directors are sort of supporting it at this point. And I think there's going to have to be some kind of reckoning, because a business is particularly one that trades in public markets on the stock exchange has to be available to everybody, and can't exclude one political ideology just because that happens to be who the people, the ideology of the people who are currently running that business.
So how do you see this playing out? I mean, it's increasingly becoming even, I think, sharper in its contrast. I mean, you've got lending institutions refusing to lend money to organizations that have a certain ideology. You've got, you know, Hollywood saying, like Netflix saying that they're going to boycott Georgia if they move forward with pro-life legislation. I mean, as you say, these are people that should be in the business to provide a service or a product that all people would want. But it's not happening that way. I mean, there is clearly a drawing of a line and people choosing sides in the business world.
Yeah, there is, and I think it's a subset of the larger problem we're having as a society today, where we see this increasing polarization in virtually everything that we do. The good news from the business perspective is, so far, you know, very few of these boycotts have panned out or worked. I think the consumer is still, you know, rational and making decisions about what they want to buy based on the quality of a product and not the ideology of a particular company, though you do see it some.
Well, let me ask you about that. As a former CEO of Walmart, you know, sitting in that driver's seat, what were the things that you listened to? When, you know, Walmart may have made a decision to do one thing or the other, how responsive were you to the consumers? Was it whether or not they walked through the door and they bought the product, or was it that they sent you a letter, or how'd that work for you?
Well, it's really challenging, Tony, because, you know, ultimately when you sit in those chairs and you run a company, you're on a board of directors, your responsibility is to the customers, the shareholders, and the employees. And you have to make your decisions with those three groups in mind. And there are times when one of those three is superior to the other two, and that moves. But the reality is that groups can muster support in a way that makes their voice disproportionate to their and can lead you to the wrong direction. I was when I was there, we were subject to letter writing campaigns. When I got, honestly, mail trucks that would pull up at my house, that they would send letters to my home to try to get us to do something. And it was scary because you don't know what's in those letters in a lot of cases, and the phone calls. And then honestly, there's groups and there the ability that they have now, particularly with social media, to organize an effort to influence a company that's actually disproportionate to their voice, and can lead you to make a decision that might be the wrong one for those three groups that I discussed. And so it's very challenging, and you ultimately have to sit back and make a decision based on what you think is best for your customer, your shareholders, and your employees.
Well, let me ask you, based on those three, the shareholders, the employees, the customers, I would see it this way. I don't know. Maybe you see it differently, and I'd certainly like your opinion. I see companies stepping outside of those three areas because clearly some decisions that are being made, like, for instance, I'll use an example in the last couple of years, Target, where Target got out, adopted a policy on bathrooms and changings that hurt their bottom line, clearly was not what their customers wanted because they themselves were the target of a boycott. I mean, do we see CEOs making decisions beyond those three areas of concern and consideration?
I think you see it in the example that you gave. I'm not sure that's exactly what happened. I think that like I said, the pressure in the interest group that can organize to deliver a message can make you believe that that's what your customer's telling you, when in fact that's not the case. And so you really have to be careful about the actions that you take and making sure that you really understand who your customer is and what it is that they want. And I think in a lot of cases, companies, have the right intent, but end up with the wrong action because they're listening to the wrong sets of voices at different times.
Well, Bill Simon, I got one final question for you, and this may make other CEOs cringe, but speak to the consumers for a moment, our listeners who, by and large, on the 300 stations or so across this nation that listen, are Christians, conservatives, care about the climate, moral climate in which we live, but they see increasingly these business taking positions that are hostile to their values and what they're trying to instill in their families and their children. How can they best communicate their concern?
I think the very, very best way you can communicate your concern is with your wallet. I mean, ultimately, that's what companies do. They're in business to make money and to reward their shareholders and to pay their employees. And when a company does something that you don't agree with, or their product represents something that you don't agree with, the simple answer is to not buy it or not participate. And that's honestly the loudest voice that a customer can deliver to a company is, I choose not to buy your product. A 3% change in the sales of a company or a 5% change in the sales company will make a huge statement. It doesn't take a lot of people to stop buying a product or to stop going to a retailer or a restaurant or whatever it is for them to notice, because a couple of percentage points is win or lose for a company.
Bill, we got to leave it there. Out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. Bill Simon. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Folks, you know what the deal is. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, just keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.